History Czar, all history, all the time. I'm the History Czar, Paul, and I'm here with
Producer Million.
And we have plenty of announcements to go over and different clearinghouse items to do, so let's just get to it. In April, starting in February 15th. All right, great.
We'll back in time?
You know, all that drinking between shows is not good.
Did you hit 88 miles per hour? And I didn't notice.
That's right. And if my calculations are correct, Marty... It took me 30 years of my entire family fortune to make the flux capacitor. Anyway, in April, starting on April 15th, 2011, we're going to be going double all the career all the time. Producer Million's losing it here.
That was a great impression.
I do look pretty good, Doc Brown, I will say that.
Marty!
And we're going to be doing two Careers Our shows a week starting on April 15th. So look forward to that. We're also expanding our programming here at the Czar Family Radio Programs. We're going to be starting the Bible Czar, premiering April 22nd, 2011. All Bible, all the time. We're looking forward to that. And we would like, with that expansion in our programming, and obviously the History Czar is just going gangbusters, you should want to join us. So the sponsorship and advertising plug Czar will tell you why.
All right, we are making history here on the Czar Family of Programs, and we want you to be part of it, be part of the family itself. Email us at thehistoryczar@cs.com and send us some information about yourself. Tell us about your company, your business, your product, what your project, whatever you're working on, and let's see how we can put something together to get the word out across the nation, across the world, and let people know that you're out there. And at the same time, we build our family and we build our links to everyone. So email us at thehistoryczar@cs.com and find out how we can serve you.
And on the web, there is a new website called thecityfm.com that is just awesome. Producer Million, you know anything about that?
Yeah, the owner's a weirdo.
Yeah, he's a whack job. But anyway, totally. And it happens to be Producer Million, but yeah. What are you doing out there?
TheCityFM.com is my new company. It is a podcast production studio serving the Las Vegas Valley and of course, other parts of the world as well. But don't forget, you can find Career Czar and History Czar and Bible Czar coming up soon. You can find information there, as well as other programs of just all kind of cool variety and interest. TheCityFM.com.
And if you always wanted to be a podcast star, go to thecityfm.com and contact Producer Million, and he can help you out with that.
Indeed.
All right. If you have $100,000 to $10 million or
anywhere in between,
you can invest in the creation of the first Jeep movie project, subject of our October 29th, 2010 show. Email us at those addresses Producer Million just gave you, and let's talk. You can check us out at www.historyczar.com, Facebook page, History Czar Internet Radio Program. Go out there and like us like the fifth grade. Check us out on Twitter, www.twitter.com/HistoryCzar. The Great Czar Book Giveaway is going on. Email us, again, at the addresses that we've had. Send us your name and address. We got tons of books to give away. You can check out more about that at our blog, www.historyczar.wordpress.com. And contributing host Walter Brash has donated great books to this giveaway, so you want to get in on it. Our last show was a submarine service with Richard Lowry. It was a great show. Richard talked about serving in submarines during the Vietnam War era and what that was like. Just great stuff. However, the submarine has surfaced and has spotted a pirate ship. And today, we have Cindy Valor, who's going to talk about women pirates. So, Cindy, welcome back to the program.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
About a year ago, Cindy joined us and talked about the Scottish Jacobite Uprising in the 1740s in, well, Scotland, since it was the Scottish Jacobite Uprising. And it was a great show, so check that out. Cindy, why don't you refamiliarize our guests with your background and experience and then take us into the world of women pirates?
Well, I'm a former school librarian who became a writer. One of the things that has always fascinated me, even before it became popular, was women's history. And around 1976, Life magazine came out with a magazine just about women. And I kind of tend towards the women who aren't your typical women, the ones who rebel against society, who go astray outside the norm. So I was going through the magazine, found a lot of people that I liked, some I knew from my own explorations, but there were no pirates in them. And then one day I was watching a Disney World, back when Disney would come in and introduce his weekly television show, about a gentleman pirate who helped Andrew Jackson win the Battle of New Orleans in 1815. And that got me intrigued, and I decided I would write a story. I'm still working on that book. But in order to write it, I had to learn about pirates, and so that's how I got involved in pirates. When I started being a writer, I needed something to write about, and so I started writing a column about the history of maritime piracy, and I've been doing that for about 11 years now, and it's called Pirates and Privateers, and as a result, I've kind of become an expert historian on maritime pirates from ancient times to present day.
Very, very good. Very well done. Okay, here we didn't prep this up, Producer Million. Here we go. Ready? Yep. Was that Jean Lafitte with Andrew Jackson?
Jean
Lafitte. Score for the History Czar.
All right. I'll mark in your column.
All right, so who's the... Do you want to talk about a particular woman pirates, or do you want to talk about the role of women pirates in general to start off, or something in between?
Well, I have... I will talk about some specifics, but I think you have to understand a bit about women at the time and how they could carry it off, because a lot of women had to adopt a male persona. They didn't do this as women, they did it as men. And so that seems a little unusual. And how could a woman become a man, you know, without having a sex change operation and everything? So I thought I'd talk about that a bit first.
Go ahead.
Okay. The Articles of Agreement, which is a list of rules and regulations that pirates sail under, often include one that says that women cannot be aboard their ship. And this stems from the fact that sailors are very superstitious. As David Cordingly wrote in one of his books, women were weak, feckless, hysterical beings who distracted men and brought bad luck to ships, calling forth supernatural winds that sank vessels and drowned men. Now, we know that's a bunch of hogwash, but men wrote most of history, and so that's what people believed in the time period. But there were women who strayed outside the normal bounds of society and became men, at least in the way they acted and in the way they dressed and what they did for a living. When a woman adopted such a persona, she had to do more than just dress as a man. She had to learn how to fight like a man, carouse like a man, swear like a man, walk like a man. In fact, Sarah Collins enlisted during the Civil War as a soldier, but she was discovered because of her unmasculine way of putting on her shoes and stockings. So there were women who did go to sea. And getting aboard a ship in the age of sail, which is around 1650 to 1850, was not really that difficult. Sailors wore baggy clothes, and that was made it easy to disguise a woman's shape, and if she bound her breast, that made it doubly easy for her. Mariners wore their hair long. They tied it in a pigtail and tarred it, so it wasn't unusual for men to have long hair. And sailors rarely had to remove their clothes. The only time they did was if they got wounded and the doctor said they had to. The unusual thing is, I mean, you're in a world of men. There's not a lot of privacy, so taking care of bodily functions could be a slight problem. But women would affix tubes inside their breeches to appear to urinate as a man. Many sailors contracted venereal diseases, so they didn't think it strange if they saw a sailor bleeding. And a woman probably did not get her period during this time because of the poor food and because of the strenuous work that they had to do aboard the ship. And as for her not shaving, men don't usually shave when they're on a ship, and also they just assume she hadn't gone through puberty yet.
Yeah, we're heading... Why. Go ahead, I'm sorry. Go ahead, one point, and we're just heading toward a break.
Okay. Well, as to why she would do that, it was because she didn't want to earn a living prostituting herself, or she wanted to keep her wages instead of giving them to her husband or father. She wanted to learn a trade that she wouldn't usually be allowed to as a woman, or she wanted the rights that a man had because women did not have those rights.
Excellent point, Cindy, and we're heading to the break, but it's what I really liked how you set that up was it wasn't easy, but it wasn't impossible to be able to you know, change roles into a man in this particular environment if you really wanted to do it. So we're looking forward to hearing more about women pirates in the next segment. So come back. You're listening to History Czar, all history, all the time. History Czar, all history, all the time. History Czar Paul, and I'm here with
Producer Million.
And we're talking today with Cindy Valor about women pirates. Please listen to all our shameless plugs, announcements, and proselytizing in the first segment. SAT word for
wow.
The day. Proselytizing. I had to get that in there. In the first segment, Cindy reminded our viewers about her background and experience because she'd been on before and did a really excellent job of setting the overall context of how women pirates were able to why they wanted to become pirates, and also how they could pull that off. So in this segment, Cindy, there was a rumor going around, started by you, by the way, Cindy, so we want to make sure you're blamed, that you're going to talk about the two most famous women pirates. So if that rumor is true, who's the first person we're going to talk about, and take it away.
Okay, well, we're going to talk about these two together because they actually were on the same pirate crew. During the Golden Age of Piracy, which is 1715 to 1725, it's a period where the most pirates hunted on the seas, particularly the Caribbean, the Atlantic coast, and around the coast of Africa, at more so than any other time period in history. 35% of these pirates were English. There were other nationalities, but 35% were English. And in November of 1722, Calico Jack Rackham and his crew stood in the docket court in Jamaica on trial for piracy. And what made their trial most sensational over every other pirate trial that was going on in the period was the fact that two of his crewmen were women. Their names were Anne Bonny and Mary Read. Now, we don't know a lot about them, and what we do know comes from a book that was published in 1724 called The History of Pirates and was written by Charles Johnson. And a fair amount of that book has been proven to be fact, although there is also fiction in the book as well. But Anne Mary and Bonny Read are the best known of the women pirates. Rackham originally was a pirate. And then in 1719-1719, Woods Rogers, who was the new governor of the Bahamas, gave him a pardon because Rogers' whole intent was to rid the Caribbean of piracy. Soon after he got his pardon, Calico Jack met Anne Bonny. She was the illegitimate daughter of an Irish lawyer who lived in South Carolina. She met a poor sailor named James Bonny, and they ran away together and ended up in New Providence in the Bahamas. At some point, Calico Jack met her, and she became his mistress. James Bonny, complained to the governor, and Rogers threatened to have Anne whipped publicly if she did not go back to her husband. So Anne, dressed as a man, joined Rackham and his men, they stole a ship, and she became a pirate. And while the men returned to their pirating ways, they captured another ship, and when they captured that ship, the legend says that Anne took a liking to a new pirate. Well, it turned out that this pirate was not a man, but also another woman, and her name was Mary Read. Mary had been raised as a boy from a very early age because her mother wanted the inheritance that was promised to her son, but her son died, so Mary kind of assumed her brother's role in life. Eventually, she and her mother separated, and Mary went and joined the British Navy. When her stint in the Navy ended, she joined the British Army and became a cavalry soldier. She met another soldier. They fell in love. She revealed her sex, and they got married. They retired from the army, opened a tavern, and had a good life together. But he died, and Mary, the tavern business was suffering, so Mary decided to go back to sea, and she became a sailor aboard a merchant ship that was eventually captured by Calico Jack, and she joined his crew. And they went about pirating in the Caribbean until 1720, when Rackham's ship was attacked by a Navy ship. And at the time, Calico Jack and the other men were either drunk or sleeping below deck. Anne and Mary were the only two on the deck, and they fought, but the other two did not, or the rest of the crew did not. And eventually, Anne and Mary were overwhelmed, and the entire pirate crew was captured. At the trial, Dorothy Thomas, who had been a victim, got up and testified against Anne and Mary. She said that they were on board the sloop. They had dressed as men. They had worn long trousers and handkerchiefs on their head. They had carried machetes and pistols, cursed and swore, and threatened to murder her. And there were other witnesses that also said the same thing. Although they said that they wore women's clothes most of the time unless they were attacking other vessels, and then they dressed as men, and that the two women were there of their own free will. Well, the entire crew was convicted and sentenced to hang. Mary and Anne decided that they could plead their belly, which meant at the time that they were pregnant. An English law said that you could not put a mother-to-be to death because the baby was an innocent and could not be punished because of the mother's crimes. So the two women won a reprieve. The men were executed on November 27th, and then Mary died in prison 5 months later from jail fever, but we don't know what happened to Anne. She just kind of disappeared. Some legends say that her father was an influential enough and powerful enough that he bought her freedom, and she just went away and retired into regular society and lived a normal life. But so far, there has been no historical evidence to show what happened to her, whereas there is historical records to show that Mary died in prison.
Gee, like they say, you can't make that stuff up.
No, you can't. Mm-mm.
That'd be a great movie there, I think. So from their lives, Cindy, what lessons did you learn or things that impressed you about those particular two women?
Well, most people like Anne Bonny. I've discovered this. I review books for Pirates and Privateers, too, and most of the novels, they all focus on stories of Anne. But I've always been far more interested in Mary Read. I just think she was... had a much better persona. She was much more able to carry her off as a man, and she didn't come across as being so self-centered and egotistical as Anne often comes across as, at least in my opinion. And if you ever want to read a good interpretation of the two of them, is James L. Nelson wrote a book called The Only Life That Mattered. He takes what Charles Johnson wrote in A General History of Pirates and writes a novel based on that history, and does an excellent job of it.
Right, and I hope I took my notes correctly. Mary was the one that married the soldier and had ran a tavern and, had lived a regular life, a broader life than Anne, and then, through Circabia, people forget that, up until the 20th century, there was no social safety net. If you weren't making money, right?
Oh, exactly. Exactly. And, some people also think that it's unusual that, why couldn't a man not see that she's a woman? And it was because at the time period, people just never thought twice about who they saw. They took them at face value. If they were dressed as a man, they believed they were a man. And this is something that those who have researched the soldiers in the Revolution and the Civil War, the American Revolution, the Civil War, is that we know there were women soldiers, but people just accepted them at face value because they were dressed as a man, so they assumed they were men. And it wasn't until they were discovered, if they were discovered, that they were treated any differently.
All true. All right. You took us right to the break, Cindy. Thank you for that. So you're listening. We're going to talk about more about women pirates after the break. You're listening to the History Czar, all history, all the time. Hi, and welcome back to the History Czar, all history, all the time. I'm History Czar Paul, and I'm here with
Producer Million.
And we're talking with Cindy Valor today about women pirates. We're in the first segment. She gave us her background experience and the context of women pirates during the Age of Sail. I like that, the Age of Sail, 1650 to 1850. In the last segment, she brought us into a particular time period, if I wrote it down right, the golden age of pirating. I don't know if the people that were victims of pirate thought it was much of a golden age, but that's what they called it, according to Cindy. 1715 to 1725, did I write that down right?
Yes.
And she talked about two of her the most famous women pirates, Anne Bonny and Mary Read. And it is a crazy story there with they meet, and they got into piracy, they didn't, then they went in, they met, and under the command of Calico Jack Rackham, which I think is a great mob name.
Jack Rackham.
Jack, Calico Jack. Calico Jack. Vincenzo or something like that, anyway. But this segment, we have a nice Irish lass. Well, maybe she wasn't that nice. Cindy's going to tell us if she was nice or not. Grace O'Malley, who sailed before the Golden Age of Sail, during the reign of Queen Elizabeth I of England. Right, Cindy?
Yes.
All right, go ahead. Tell us about Grace.
Okay. Grace O'Malley is also known as Granule. That was her Irish name. And in the past, since men write most historical accounts, they tend to ignore women. But there are times that there are certain women who defy the roles assigned to them, and they gain prominence in their own right. And during the 1500s, there were two women who happened to do this at the same time. One is Grace O'Malley, and the other is Elizabeth I, and their lives are intertwined. We wouldn't know much about Grace O'Malley except the Irish bards and poets created stories about her. The Irish historians basically forgot about her. But the English archives contain correspondence from the English government officials in Ireland that was sent back to England. And so we do know that she was a real person. She actually did create quite a stir in the 1500s. She was born in 1530, the only daughter to the O'Malley chief. And at an early age, she loved danger, and she despised anybody who showed any form of cowardice. She had an astuteness that, for politics and tactics, she loved to utilize this astuteness to negotiate shrewd deals throughout her life. She dared to the impossible to gain an advantage, and she led by example. According to one legend, when she was a girl, she was aboard her father's ship. They were returning from Spain when it was attacked, and her father told her to stay below, but that wasn't what Granule wanted to do. She came up, jumped on a guy's back because he was trying to kill her father, and she saved her father's life. There's another tale that's told later in her life that the day after she gives birth to her youngest son, she had given birth to him at sea, Algerian pirates attacked the ship, and her men began to lose, so she dashed on deck and rallied them to defeat the pirates. So she had quite a persona about her that we don't know how she managed to convince the men that it was okay to be led by a woman, but she did. When she was 15 or 16 years old, she married a man named Donald O'Flaherty. They had three children together. Donald was inept as a chief. He wasn't good at providing for his people, so Granule took that over, and she helped them to survive. The law of Ireland at the time prohibited her from becoming chief, but in fact that's what she was, because Donald was so bad at being the chief. When he died, her inheritance was denied her, so she had to return to her father's home, and so she returned to sailing aboard his ships. But when she left the O'Flaherty lands, 200 O'Flahertys joined her, and under her leadership, they became pirates, or as Granule preferred to call it, maintenance by land and sea. They would often stop merchant ships that were on their way to Galway, which was a port that O'Malley's were not allowed to come to. She would negotiate with the captain. She would levy tolls on them. They would, and she would provide pilots for safe passage. And if they didn't take her up on her offer, she would take their cargo. Eventually, Grenewald remarried a man named Richard in Iron Burke. They had a son named Tibbet Nalaw. Now, at the time, Brian Law allowed her to get a divorce. And see, Richard lived in a castle that was, had a good strategic value to her, and she wanted to own the castle. So whilst Richard was away, she locked the castle doors, waited till he returned, and then as soon as he returned, she announced that they were divorced, and she gained the castle. Now, that's not to say they didn't love each other. They still lived as man and wife for many years thereafter, but she became the owner of the castle at the time. In 1577, she was captured and imprisoned in Limerick Jail, and then she was transferred to Dublin Castle. And while she was a prisoner there, the Lord Justice Jury described her as being a woman that hath impudently passed the part of womanhood and been a great spoiler and chief commander and director of thieves and murderers at sea to spoil this province. Now, being in Dublin Castle as a prisoner, it was very unlikely that she would ever come back out alive. Most people that went in were executed and never seen again. Grenewald, however, proved the exception. She spent 18 months there, and then when she was freed. In 1584, a new governor of Connaught, Ireland, came in, and his name was Sir Richard Bingham, and he had one goal, and that was to eradicate the Gaelic way of life by force. Of course, that didn't sit well with Grenewald or her family or any of the other Gaelic tribes, so they rebelled. And in 1586, she was captured, and he intended to hang her, but instead exchanged her for her son-in-law and 1,000 head of cattle. During this time, her eldest son was killed, and then Bingham also imprisoned her youngest son, and she feared greatly that Tybalt would not ever see the light of day again. So she decided that the only thing she could do was to petition Queen Elizabeth to pardon Grenewald for being forced to protect her interests because the English king governors were so incapable of coping with Ireland, and to grant her money so she could live on so she wouldn't have to be a pirate. In exchange, she promised that she would fight Queen Elizabeth's enemies for the rest of her life. So Elizabeth was intrigued enough that she sent a list of 18 questions for Grenewald to answer. Now, obviously, Grenewald is not going to be real forthright in how she answers these questions. She highlights events that the English would find the least objectionable. She doesn't say anything about piracy or rebellion. And then she sends these answers back. But she's not content to wait for Elizabeth to make her decision just on those answers. And even though there's a price on her, on Grenewald's head, she sails to England. And in September of 1593, she goes to Greenwich Castle, which is where Queen Elizabeth is at a time, and she gains an audience with Queen Elizabeth, a private audience. There is no record as to what transpired during that meeting. No records were ever kept, but afterwards, Elizabeth granted her request. Tybalt was released, and Bingham was eventually recalled in disgrace 2 years later, and also Grenewald was given a regular not a salary, but money so that she could live a life. And she lived a quiet life and wasn't real much of a rebel after that. And she lived to be, she lived until she was 1603.
Well, that's a fascinating story, and you took us right to the break. So we'll wrap up Grace O'Malley and finish up with Women Pirates, where Sydney wants to take us when we come back. You're listening to The History Czar, all history, all the time. History all the time. I'm History Czar Paul, and I'm here with
Producer Million.
And we're talking with Cindy Valor today about women pirates in the first segment, background experience and an overview. Second segment, we talked about Cindy did most of the talking and all the work, and we just basically hanged on her coattails, Producer Million, which is pretty much what we do every week. And Bonnie and Mary Reed. In the last segment, Cindy talked about Grace O'Malley during the Elizabethan age, which was the 16th century, probably around 15. She was born in 1530 and died in 1603. And Cindy, you don't have to comment to these two things that I would thought of while you were talking about her. Is one is, why do women who have so much talent marry morons? You know, the first marriage is inept. It's like, can't these women choose good men? Looks like,
but
she did better.
See, they weren't allowed to choose. That's the whole thing.
Oh, all right. Okay. Well then, thank you for that.
Husbands were chosen for them.
All right. Yeah, that's probably true. So anyway, I just couldn't resist. Like, man, there's all this talent. And all right. So that's horrible. That was the first thing. And then what we didn't know, Producer Million, and then we're going to move on to our final women pirate, is Grace O'Malley, besides all the other things she did, and Granule, as she was known by at the time, and did many, many great things in her life. But she was the mother of political correctness. Mm. She came up with maintenance by land and sea. See, political correctness has been around. It was just something that I thought
nothing
of.
New.
And none of my jokes are ever funny, but you know, I like to tell them anyway. Hey, very funny over there, okay? You're supposed to back me up, all right? Come on. Anyway, you have a final woman pirate you'd like to tell us about. I almost called her Grace. Hey, I'm totally lost here. This is what happens when the host gets lost in the show. Now, Cindy, and who would that pirate be?
Her name was Chang Yi So. Obviously, I don't speak Chinese, so I'm probably not pronouncing it the way they would, but that's how I pronounce it. One thing you have to understand about Asian piracy is that, and this isn't just in Asia, it's anywhere where there's poor nations. Piracy can be a way of life. Sometimes it's the only way in which people can survive. And in China, especially because of the long coasts that they had and some of the history of China and what the rulers would enforce, sometimes it was the only way fishermen and traders could make a living, was to be pirates. And in the South China Sea, where there were a fair number of families who lived on the junks, the vessels that they sailed, the entire family crowded onto one. It was the youngest infant to the oldest grandparent, and women worked alongside the men. There was a pirate named Chang, a sea robber, and he married a prostitute, and she became known as Chang Yi So, which means the wife of Chang. And together they organized a confederation of pirates that eventually would number over 50,000 people. They would ransom captives and ships. They would extort payment from people who lived along the coast so that if you paid them, they wouldn't attack your village. In 1807, Chang Yi So's husband died. They're not quite sure how. He may have been lost at sea during a storm. But he died, and she assumed command of the pirates. Now, she wasn't foolish enough to think that they would just accept her as their ruler. But so she appointed Chang Pao, who was her husband's adopted son, the leader of the Red Fleet, which is the one that her husband commanded. And it was the most powerful of the six fleets in the Confederation. And pretty soon Chang Pao and Chang Yi So became lovers. And she had a code of conduct that was very, very explicit as to what would happen. It's kind of like the Articles of Agreement that other pirates in the Caribbean had. And each pirate in her confederation received 2 plundered pieces for every 10 plundered pieces that they captured. She did not ever wish to live hand to mouth, so that's why she gave everybody some money, and the rest of it was stored in warehouses for the good of all. And this way her squadrons were always armed and ready. And if you broke her laws, there were harsh punishments. For example, if you disobeyed an order or you stole from the common plunder, you lost your head, literally. Deserters lost their ears. If you concealed booty from the common plunder, then the first time you were flogged, if you did it a second time, you would die. If you raped a female captive, you were executed. If you had sex with a woman who was amenable to that sex and you were not married, the man would be beheaded while weights were tied on the woman's legs and she was tossed overboard. So she was very strict in what you could and could not do. Obviously, the Chinese Imperial Navy was not too thrilled with the pirates, but they couldn't really do much about the pirates. In fact, the pirates, by 1808, had destroyed 63 Imperial naval vessels. One captured officer was nailed to the deck of his ship. Then he was beaten until he vomited blood. They took him ashore and they butchered him. Admiral Kuo Lang, rather than risk being captured, committed suicide. And so the pirates continued on. And the only thing that the coastal villagers could do was create their own militias. But if the militias fought the pirates exacted a horrific revenge on those who defied them. In 1809, they beheaded 80 men of Sanshan Village. They abducted the women and children and held them for ransom. Or if they were not ransomed, they were sold into slavery. And seamen of captured merchant ships could either join them or suffer an excruciating death. At the height of her power, Cheng Yiso commanded a pirate fleet that surpassed the navies of many countries. She had more than 200 ocean-going junks that were armed with 20 to 30 guns, and they were manned by up to 400 pirates each. She also controlled 600 to 800 coastal vessels and dozens of river junks. She also had a network of spies who watched the harbors and reported potential targets for them to hit. The imperial government was really getting tired. They needed help to bring her to justice. So they enlisted the help of the Portuguese and the British, who had warships that had iron hulls and could withstand the cannon that the Chinese pirates could bring against them. And Cheng Yiso decided it was a good time to retire from piracy, but she just didn't fade away. What she did was in April 1810, she negotiated her own terms of amnesty with, and notice I didn't say surrender, amnesty with the Governor General of Canton. And less than 400 of her pirates suffered any form of punishment. 60 were banished for 2 years, 151 were exiled, and only 126 lost their lives. The remaining 17,318 pirates surrendered their weapons and their 226 junks, but kept all the plunder that they had ever gotten and still had. And those who wished to could join the army, which is what Cheng Pao, her lover, did, and he received the rank of lieutenant and became commander of a private fleet of 20 junks, and he would eventually rise to the rank of colonel. Cheng Yiso and Cheng Pao settled in Fujian, China. Eventually, they married and had the son. When Cheng died in 1822, he was 36 years old, and Cheng Yiso decided to return to Canton. She was a wealthy woman. She ran a gambling house, possibly a ring of smugglers. But otherwise, she rang a quiet life. Otherwise, she led a quiet life until she died in 1844 at the age of 69. And it's very unusual for a pirate to live to a ripe old age. Numerous written records of her exploits and her battles exist, but there is no mention anywhere of what she looked like. So we don't know anything about her personally or the clue, or and have no clues as to what her character was like. We can only surmise by from what she did that she was resourceful, powerful, and cunning, and she was able to combine strict discipline with uncommon business acumen. She was the most feared and notorious pirate of her day, which was the early 1800s. She was also the most successful pirate in all of history.
Well said, Cindy. We're toward the end of the show. Do you have any concluding marks? What's this, Germany? We got a little Marx going on here. God. Groucho Marx? Okay, how many more Marx jokes? Any concluding remarks that you'd like to leave our listeners with?
Just to let you know that there are other women pirates, none of them as well-known as these or that left such a mark, but there are others. There's a list out there that has about 40 on them, some of whom may or may not have actually been real pirates or have actually been real people. And if anyone wants to know more about pirates, I invite them to come visit me at my website, www.cindyvaller.com/pirates, and you can read articles on the history of piracy. You can find out what other links are out there on the web for good pirate information, and you can learn about the latest books on pirates, both novels and nonfiction, as well as books on the Age of Sail.
Thank you, Cindy, for being with us. Great show. Next week's show is going to be Wargaming with Jim Werbeness, so come back for that one. You've listened to the History Czar, all history, all the time.